Okay, good Wednesday to you, and a happy Yom Yerushalayim. Certainly a responsibility incumbent upon each of us to recognize the significance of Yerushalayim in our lives in whatever way we can and do. Certainly the thoughts of Rav Chaim Sabato Shalita sit high in our minds when we think that, as we say in Tehillim, Nachon Kisacha Me'az, that Yerushalayim's Kisei, the reference to Yerushalayim, was already established at Uz, of Uz Yashir, which leads one to believe, says Rav Sabato, that even though Yerushalayim was not established yet, and certainly the Beis HaMikdash was not built, we have the ability to offer a Shira to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Certainly our situation in Yerushalayim, Bizman HaZeh, is certainly much better than the awareness of the shores of Yam Suf, of Yerushalayim, but at the same time, the understanding that we daven each and every day, that we daven that the Ribono Shel Olam should be machazir shechinas l'tzion, and mirtz Hashem b'mehera v'yameinu, to achieve that bracha fully in its actuality. We look forward to that as well. Moving ahead to the Parsha, though, because this coming week we will read Parshas Naso in anticipation of Chag HaShavuos. The Parsha begins, Naso es Rosh b'nei Gershon, picking up where we left off in last week's Parsha with the order of the jobs of the Levium and the census of the Levium that had to be done. Now, it's interesting that the Torah spends so much time on the jobs of the Levium. After all, the jobs of the Levium in the Midbar, v'nasu es yirios ha-mishkan, to carry the curtains, as is identified as the job of the B'nai Gershon, but these jobs are only going to be temporary. We spend good chunks of two whole parshios, b'Midbar and Naso. Why are we stressing on these activities of the Levi? Rav Amital, Zatzal v'least, Rosh Yeshiva of Haretzion, explains that there are deeper details to the physical activities of the Levi that are enumerated here. Carrying the Kalim, or carrying the Mishkan, was, and continues to remain, a lesson to Bnei Yisrael that no matter where they travel, they can and do make an impact, and they can find a place for Hashras HaShchina in the process. The impact on the Levium came from the jobs that they did. And the same thing is true for each of us who choose to do the job of the Levi. We have an ability not only to realize that we impact the job, but by being Lomdei Torah, the job of being a Lomdei Torah, in whatever facet that we choose to do so, is something that affects us and how we shape our lives as well. Hashem becomes our chelek, says the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Shmita v'Yovel, and we have an opportunity to be a chelek with him as well. Later on in the parsha, we're told, Ishas kadashav lo yiyu isha asher yitain la kohen lo yihiyah, man's kodesh shall be for him, that which he gives to the kohen shall be for him. And the Chafetz Chaim explains that the only real tangible possessions of a person are the kadashav, and are the spiritual efforts that he makes and achieves in this world. Parenthetically, they're also the only things that go with him when he leaves this world. So when we're looking for Geula, when we're looking for Geula Sanefesh, when we're looking for where we put our efforts in life, it would be incumbent and important for each of us to realize, Ish es kadashav lo yihiyu, the kadashav, the things that we do, that we dedicate ourselves for Kodesh, shall be for us, lo yihiyu, they will affect us, and they will be identified as ours forevermore. Shifting gears, though, the Torah then turns around and tells us about the Isha Sota. And one of the things that we're told about the Isha Sota is that her husband brings her to the Kohen, and she brings a karban, kamach saorim, of flour of barley. And the question has to be asked, why does the woman who is a Sota bring a karban specifically of barley? So, you know, the Baba Verbi quotes Rashi, quotes the famous comment of the Gemara in Sota, he asked a maisa behema. She had done an action of an animal, and so her carbon is maichal behema, is the food of animals. But the fact of the matter is that only explains the woman who actually engaged in licentious behavior. Isn't it too quick to assume that she had done a masa behema? The Baba Verebi Shlita explains that no, the actions of a behema is that of rushing. Think about all the times that you were in high school, and your teachers or rebbes would have commented, as mine did, Watch out, you look like a stampede of behemoths running to the Chadar Ochel. Behemoths rush. So the same thing is true over here as well. If she sinned, the carbon references and atones for her sinful behavior of rushing to sin. But if not, the reward for the accusation is a rush on the process of continuing life, namely the fact, v'nikta v'nizra zara. There's an opportunity for the activity of rushing to be utilized as an atonement as well. And that's what the message of the barley is all about. V'chiper alav ha-me'asher chata la-nafesh, the one who becomes a nazir, has to atone as well. And Rashi explains that why is a nazir atoning? He should atone for holding himself back, al-shatzir atzmo min ayayin, for holding himself back from wine. And the Gemara in Tainus learns from here that if one undertakes a major fast, he's also called a chote. As a kal v'chomer from a nazir, the nazir at least is allowed to eat. He's just not allowed to partake of grape products. A person who takes on fasts for flagellation is indeed not supposed to hold from any food. So he too must be a chote. And the Ksav Sofer explains why. For when a person undergoes a spiritual experience and remains the same, unchanged by it, then it's not a spiritual experience. All it really is torture. So when the Torah gives us a prescription, whether it's a nazirus, whether it's a mitzvah, whether it's a tainus, the Torah wants us to grow in the process. If we don't gain from the process, then we're merely torturing ourselves. Very often in life, we look for spiritual ascent, but often that may be crowded by self-aggrandizement or martyrdom, flagellation, etc. Zakta Torah, no. When you do it for your own personal aggrandizement and you don't grow within the process, then you're a chote. It's inherent by virtue of the fact that you didn't gain anything else from it. After the stories of the Sota and the Nazir were told, Ko Sevarchu es B'nei Yisrael, this is how you should give the bracha to B'nei Yisrael. And Rashi explains that the Kohanim are not allowed to give a bracha speedily, but rather have to give it b'kavana u'b'lev shalem. Rav David Cohn Shalita, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Cheverna Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, explains that this is why this is the only mitzvah whose bracha includes an emotion as a charge. The only way to offer Birkas Kohanim is with Kavana and a full heart. And so therefore, that needs to be a part of the mitzvah. And therefore, that needs to be a part of the bracha that's explained at the outset. That Sheret Kiddishanu B'Kdushasol Shalarol B'Tzivanu Levarech Hasamal Yisrael B'Ahava. And if there is no Ahava, then we're not allowed to fulfill this mitzvah. We're not doing it in the right way. It's interesting because the Torah uses the word amor. Amor lahem, you should speak to them this way. And Rashi notes that the word amor is like the word zachor that's used in regard to Shabbos. Amar and Rav Shechter Shalita used to explain to us that the intent of this grammatical style is to impress the fact that we are talking about engaging in an ongoing requirement. In regard to Shabbos, we're told not merely to remember Shabbos on Friday afternoon, but Zohor is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, you have to remember it all week long in order for you to properly sanctify it. And in regard to Birkas Kohanim, the Kohanim need to possess that positive spirit all the time. They need to remember Amor, at the time that you are turning around to offer Birkas Kohanim, it needs to come from a state that pervades within you all the time. Hence maybe, says Rav Shechter in Chutz La'aretz, where it's hard to have a Tov Ayin all the time, there's a limitation on the opportunities to recite Birchas Kohanim, at least among Ashkenazim. Amor Lahem, create an environment that's positive. After that long aliyah, we spend the rest of the parsha on the Karbanos of the Nesiim. And after reading Nachshon ben Aminadav's Karban, the Torah goes back and spends so much time on each one of the 12 Karbanos of the Nesiim, even though each one brought the exact same thing. And the question has to be asked as to why. Maran Rav Golvach Zatzal, Rav Chaim Yaakov Golvach, used to tell us that if one looks into the Medrash, one discovers that each Nasi had a different intent that led him to bring the particular carbon that he brought. So although in the end the ends were the same, they were the exact same thing, the reasons behind the Karbanos were different.
And so therefore the Torah elaborates each carbon in its right time on behalf of each Nasi, because each one had a different intent. Rav Shach Zatzal adds that in Shamayim Hashem doesn't only appreciate the masses, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu celebrates with each individual as if he were the only one in the world. And so therefore, although Nashon brought the carbon at the first day, he came to celebrate with Nisano ben Tzuar on the second, and Eliab ben Chelon after him, and so on and so forth. It's a tough concept if we simply just say, oh, the first one did it, and then we move on. Each one is significant. Each one deserves his own day and his own light in the sun. Finally, in the Haftorah, we read about the story of the birth of Shimshon, or actually the prelude to the birth of Shimshon, including the fact that the Malach appeared to the wife of Manoach and told her about how she would have to accept a certain diet, ki nazir alokimia narmin abaten, because the child is going to be a nazir from his days, from the time of conception. It's interesting, the Malach appears to Manoach's wife, but never appears to Manoach, and yet at the same time, Manoach's wife is not named in the Navi, and Manoach is. And the Medrash notes that there was an ongoing marital strife between Manoach and his wife as to why they were not able to have children. Each one, Manoach and Hatzalfuni, his wife, would claim that it was the other one's fault. The Malach told Mrs. Manoach that no, indeed she was wrong. Hineyata kara, you're the one who has the biological problem. Beharis, don't worry, that problem is going to be lifted. Yaladat bein, and you're going to have a child. In fact, the Eitz Yosef on the Medrash notes that the Malach appeared to Mrs. Manoach and not to Manoach in order to help create an environment of shalom bayis. How so? Rabbi Yamin Eisenberger in his wonderful Sefer Mesilas HaNeviim explains that there's an important lesson in marital counseling here. It's not best to turn to the side that's right and say, you're right, you were right the whole time. Because when a person is right, he holds it over the other side. And he inflames the argument, and the passions get worse, and the divide between a couple gets better. Instead, says Rabbi Eisenberger, and this is supported by the psychological literature, it's better to go back to the other side with greater respect and care, but to work to get that angle to make amends, in order to bring the first side back, l'mana shalom. The Malach goes to Mrs. Manoach, not because Manoach wasn't deserving, but rather because, by appearing to Mrs. Manoach, he could convince Mrs. Manoach to return back to Manoach to make shalom, and to continue on to celebrate their path of Jewish destiny. Sometimes in our lives, we're so worried about being right. I recall very often a comment that was made by a fellow colleague in the field of marital counseling. The question that couples have to ask sometimes is, do they want to be right or do they want to be happy? And in regard to this issue, clearly the Malach stepped in. Be happy. Not always is happiness dependent on being right. The best wishes for a happy Shabbos.